bucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program if you so desire. Still to come on the program, State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion. Let's get through some text here real quick. Angie writes, good morning, Jeff. I'm curious, with Rep. Marcus no longer at AL1, did Austin Sidwell pick up Katie Britt's endorsement during his trip to D.C. this week? No, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, Jerry Carl's probably going to be congressman. I mean, anything could happen. But, no, I think that it's funny you talk about that. I was just talking to somebody about that. But it's funny you bring that up. I think ultimately, whatever the differences are, will be resolved and life will go on. Paul writes, let's see here, as much of an interest of the whole world in keeping the Hormuz open and how unpopular Iran is to the world, I'm surprised not more nations haven't stepped up to coordinate together on the Hormuz choke point. The planners look like special needs to not have anticipated this and to not have had the resources that are threatening Hormuz not being part of the internal blitz. I think the world looks at this, Paul, and we like every foreign policy of every event in the world is always viewed through this American centric perspective and by our news media. And we look at like the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Well, what you know, from this American political perspective. But I think globally, outside of the United States, maybe outside of North America even, the world blames the U.S. for this. They blame the U.S. and Israel. I mean, Israel is not universally popular. I mean, you think it's bad here, with like the Mikes and other guys who texted to the program, like the Israeli approval rating is, I mean, Israel's one of the most unpopular things on the globe. Is there some anti-Semitism? Yes. But Paul, they look at that and they look at like the Strait of Hormuz and Iran and they blame us. They blame Israel. And that's why the globe, that's why these like UN types that they're not willing to get on board and do something against Iran because they don't perceive Iran to be the boogeyman here like we do. Right or wrong, that's a subjective sort of assessment you'll have to make. But that's the way the world looks at it. That's the way China and Russia look at it. That's the way the Europeans look at it. We are paying higher gas prices because of an American imperialistic tendency or something of that sort. And they assume the worst with our intentions. And they don't look at Iran as the axis of evil as we have perceived it for decades. Be dark. Jeff, the prices at the pump ain't as big of an issue as freedom, just something to distract people. Freedom from what? Like, how is Iran and its back Middle Ages view of Islam, its culture, how does that impact your freedom on a daily basis, Be dark? Yes, they chant death to America. Yes, they chant death to Israel. How does that impact you here in Alabama? I'm not, you know, going to preach to you the merits of Pat Buchanan isolationism. But we got to be careful when we play the freedom, quote unquote, freedom card. We are a nation state independent of the world. We're not global citizens. The one argument with why the U.S. has all these interventionist policies is because of our economic interest. I'm willing to accept that. However, our interventionist policies are harming our economic interest right now. So that sort of negates the whole point of the U.S. being the world's policeman and having this global order where we're the superpower, where we are the moral authority in the world. Because you'd be like, well, why are we bestowing this upon ourselves? Well, it's in our economic interest because our economic interests have a lot to do with our quality of life. You want to make sure that the shipping lanes around the world are open, that there's not piracy or there's not a rogue nation seizing ships and plunder. That the United States serves a good purpose here because it kind of keeps things in order. But the problem is when we execute this notion, when we execute this policy, well, as it turns out, when we try to do this and presumably try to do the right thing here, there are economic consequences, and that negates the whole idea that our quality of life is being damaged by this foreign policy. Mike, I think much of the world are tired of the boy crying wolf for the past five decades and are just ready to let the wolf eat the boy. I don't think that's true. I don't think that people are ready for Israel to fall. That's just not going to happen as long as America's involved in the global stage. If we were like Belgium, if we were some, Australia even, sure, but the United States is not going to let that happen. And, I mean, Mike, you could gripe about it all you want, but the reality is much different than people just haven't arrived at your point of view. Iran is the main funder of terrorism, and they do attack anybody they don't like. They don't like us. When's the last time we had an Iranian terror attack in the United States? I'm sure there's been some, but how has it impacted your life? How has it impacted your freedom? Because I think it's this. It's not the terror attacks we see around the globe. They're not motivated by like a Persian nationalism. They're motivated by the religion of peace. They're motivated by Islam and some of the Islamic teachings in some places. They're not motivated by, the flag of Iran and nationalistic pride. It's a theocracy. Their religion, which is, maybe it's been co-opted. I'm sure it's been co-opted, actually, to encourage that kind of behavior. But it's not like a World Cup soccer match. The people aren't doing this in the name of Tehran. They're doing it in the name of Allah. And we're clearly not going to go to war with Islam. But why are we going to war with Iran? Now, we don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. That's fair. I mean, it's a theocratic basket case. Would Iran, for the sake of its own domestic politics, because I think that's where all this comes from, the hatred of the United States, the hatred of Israel, death to America, death to Israel, those are universally held beliefs by a lot of Iranians, a lot of Persians, but in the seats of power, the people who run that nation state are ginning it up to solidify their control of power. They're ginning it up because there's incentive for them to retain power. It's their domestic politics. It's their sort of nationalism, but it's steeped in this, like I said, this Middle Ages religious belief. Be Dark adds, they want a one world order and the U.S. is neck deep in world control. Trust me. IT Jesus, the Islamists hated us way before we got involved in the Middle East. But, well, that hate is coming from somewhere. Like, are you just born into an Islamic country with this preconceived notion about the United States of America, about Christianity, about Judaism? Or is it taught? It's taught. That's what they teach in the schools there, the madrasas. That's what they teach. That's why do they teach that? Where does that come from? I need to sound like the stupid coexist bumper sticker. But they teach it because it benefits them politically. It benefits them to maintain a hold on power. I mean, that is a chaotic place. That they have regime change. They have palace intrigue. They don't have democratic elections. Or if they do, they're for show. They had to keep this big populace in order, aligned with their viewpoints. Or they would have a civil uprising and they could be unseated. It's a fragile sort of system they have. But all you do is, this is how they deposed the Shah. They ginned up enough animosity there that we're being exploited. That these Western colonialists are coming in and taking our oil. And they're trying to impose their cultural beliefs on us, their sinful ways. But it was all done to stir the pot in order to get to this, to arrive at this destination for regime change. And yeah, this theocracy. It's a political. They're co-opting the religion to get a political outcome. Mike, I don't mean the Cold War American boomers. I'm talking about the other 75% of the globe and half of America. I don't think they're ready for the wolf to eat the boy. I reject that. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Just a text in from our returning champion here, State Senator Chris Elliott, sends me a shot of a weather radar from the Bahamas, and it's not looking pretty down there, but I guess he's in the Bahamas, and may or not be called in the next segment, so hopefully we could get him on in time. In the meantime, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. What do you think of this story? The allegation that the city of Orange Beach is moving its homeless into Florida. We're always moving these homeless people around. Remember the Biloxi there was busing its homeless to Mobile, allegedly? McKinnon's fighting back. I believe it. Well, I mean, are you surprised? It shouldn't be. But the sheriff over in Escambia County, Florida, has taken issue with that. He's taken umbrage with that. Says, surely somewhere in Alabama there are people, there are programs that could keep their homeless. That from Sheriff Simmons there in Escambia County. I can simply tell you that it seems like in this particular case, you're relocating them from Orange Beach to Escambia County, and that ain't cool. That from Chip Simmons. Let's see now. We'll get the Kennan response here. Orange Beach Mayor Tony Kennan said Simmons is not the full story. They need to stay in their sandbox and quit worrying about us. So our officers actually took money out of their benevolent fund to put gas in the truck so that they could run him over, drop him off, and, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. And apparently, I guess that's it. They gave some homeless guy some money for gas, and he wound up in Escambia County. It's not as if there's a big Greyhound bus sitting down at the wharf rounding up homeless people, and they're dropping them off on the other side of the Floribama there, I guess, is the perception. Says, you know, a gentleman would have picked up the phone and made a phone call instead of running social media, but you know, tough guys always run the social media. That from Kennan. Simmons said his office made a post because they had proof of what happened. We made a post because we had a picture, we had proof of it, if you will. And we just want to have it start with that conversation, have the conversation so that we can all be on the same page. So there you have it. The mayor of Orange Beach and the sheriff of Escambia County, Florida, having a go around on social media. Now, a little levity to the political discussions we're having. 251-343-0106, Ultra Runner. Dems motivate by manipulating emotions. Just in the past week, we had a gunman shoot up the White House, and Justice Barrett's home has been swatted, and it barely makes a ripple. Why are we numb and silent to the left when the left will be screaming about when it happens to them? Because they control the media. They control the media. You mean, and it is essentially this problem. The people who go into news reporting are a bunch of left-wingers. I asked this once of a esteemed colleague of mine. Why do you think that is? I was very young. At the time, he told me that I needed to tone down my conservative leans. I would never get a job in this business. Now, I obviously didn't do that. But it's like, this is kind of, I think it's true to some degree. The media, they go into the profession because they view it as social work. They want to do something good, something positive, and it's sort of like institutional activism in their mind. So you have a media that is left wing. And once you get in that system, I mean, you sort of become a part of it. And you become dismissive of things that would help Republicans politically. But you're endeavoring toward the greater good, and greater good in their mind is Democrat control of our institutions, because they're the smart people and they're the people who really care. They're not in it for themselves. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Mona tried to tell me.
blood like wine.
Hey, I was country.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning, or what's left of this Friday morning. Text line, if you want to still get in, 251-343-0106. Joining us now, it's been a little bit, but our returning champion joins us on the line, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing well, sir. I'm doing well. Sorry we missed last week. Glad to be back with you.
Hey, thanks for hopping on. We always appreciate it. Well, I mean, it's been a busy week. First off, we'll start with we'll get into the state senate here in just a moment. Let's start with the three judge panel and their reaction and with the injunction that I think will be stayed. But why are these federal judges seemingly at war with the Alabama legislature?
You know, that's a really good question. And we tried to show them as much deference as possible, be reasonable with them, and again, respect their branch of government, right? I just don't think they're showing us a whole lot of respect. And at the end of the day, I think that the, you know, that what we'll end up seeing is a, you know, a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court saying, no, they've passed a map, used the map that the legislature passed. And I think that's exactly what we're going to see. And I really do think that their decision on the state senate, which we'll talk to you about when you're ready, but that kind of paves the way, I think, to say they see what's happening here. Y'all are making too big a deal out of this, and so I'm hopeful that that the Supreme Court will have that response for us here, you know, probably early next week, and we'll be back to doing what we should have done the whole time, which is use the maps that the Alabama legislature drew.
Matt, that preliminary injunction and some of the verbiage in that and you know, in that document, very derogatory toward you guys. That the insinuation here, my takeaway is that you know Governor Ivey calls you down to the state house and y'all get to work on that racist map, and I mean it presupposes that you guys woke up that morning and said we're gonna draw a racist map. That's their takeaway, and I don't know how they come to that conclusion.
We drew a map based on politics. There's not anybody in the Alabama legislature that's a racist anymore. Sorry, it's not the case. We drew that map based on politics, and the Supreme Court specifically said that was an okay thing to do. And so I think that when the Supreme Court gets this case and reviews that, then we will be vindicated in our decision. But anybody that says that I or any of my colleagues is a racist is wrong. I get to work with my colleagues, whether they're nice to me or not, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, day in, day out. We care about their issues. We are respectful about their issues. But at the end of the day, this is about politics. This is shirts and skins. This is R's and D's. This is not who's a racist. And I take offense to anybody that says anything other than that.
Well, and that's my next question, because, I mean, maybe I missed it. But does it seem like there was any due process here for them to come to that conclusion regarding our current state government? Sure, you could go back to 1965. I'm sure that you could make that case. We haven't adjudicated this. We haven't gone through the proper due process to determine their conclusions about what your motivations are.
Absolutely not. And I'd like for them, although I'm not sure they'd be welcome at this point, but I'd like for them to come see us at work. I'd like for them to see us work together. Because we do just that. We work together. And sometimes, you know, y'all, the talk show folks and radio hosts don't like how much we work together, but we do. And we respect each other and we show each other deference, and it is a collaborative effort a lot of times. Sometimes they win, sometimes they don't, but that's a numbers thing and it's a politics thing. And that's exactly what's going on here. This is not anybody being anything other than trying to make sure their team scores the most points. This is not racist, far from it. And it's just, I think it's small-minded to blame to blame where we are in Alabama on that.
Another theory of mine, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with race or, you know, if African-American voters in Alabama voted Republican, we're probably not having this discussion right now. But be on the other side of that equation, that their motivations aren't necessarily pure either, that they're not trying to be this benevolent protector of, you know, a race-free society, that they have very partisan motivations trying to maintain Democrat-controlled districts.
Absolutely. And you know, to their credit, they are intellectually honest about that, right? We want the Democrats to be in control, you know, and our side wants the Republicans to be in control. They're using whatever tools they've got in their toolbox to try to advance their agenda, and I don't blame them for that. Just don't blame me when we try the exact same thing the other way. And it's not, again, it is so intellectually dishonest to say every black person is going to vote, you know, Democrat, and every white person is going to vote Republican, and that somehow or another, the color of your skin dictates that. How offensive is that? How offensive is that? You know, to my colleagues like Kenneth Pascal in the House, who is a Republican, votes Republican. I work great with him. He's black. Why should that? You know, why should your skin color be, you know, govern how you think? That is just so wrongheaded today. And I'm glad we're getting away from it. I'm glad the Supreme Court has finally decided that that's not how we're going to do things in Alabama.
But and that's also this. Let's just say that you're okay with it, that a community of interest can be based on color, even though the Supreme Court says no. But what they have essentially done is they've taken like a community of interest, Mobile, Alabama, that celebrates Mardi Gras together, that works at the same place, they shop at the same places, they go to the school together, they go to church together. It is a community of interest. There are common threads through that community that make it Mobile. But they said, but we see color trumping all that. We see skin color. And they have drawn the maps accordingly to say every other community of interest variable is secondary to skin color. And I think that is, you know, that is bottom line unconstitutional.
It is. And the Supreme Court has said that, right? They have said that what the court did in Alabama was discount every goal of the legislature, right? Protecting incumbents, keeping together communities of interest, right? All of those things, took all of that and put it behind skin color. And I guess, you know, my issue is and continues to be, you've got, you know, all these white judges up here saying, no, skin color is what governs. That's the most important thing anymore. And can we not get past that and get back to talking about ideas? Get back to talking about, you know, what's important for Alabama and the best way for Alabama to grow and prosper. All of us. And instead they have hitched their argument and really decided that at the end of the day, they think that skin color governs everything. And I don't see that. I don't see that with my colleagues that I serve with. I don't see that in the people that I know, and I think it's the judges that are backwards and behind.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Real quick, one more question on this. So you guys in the special session set up a special election. If for whatever reason the Supreme Court doesn't find in your favor and you had to go back to the 5-2 map, the special election is still on, right?
It's got to be. I mean, it really does have to be. It seems like a waste, and it's the court putting us in that position, certainly. But coming out and telling the voters, hey, you're going to vote for a congressman, but it's not going to count, and then somehow or another, you know, thinking you're going to go back and count those votes after you've told everybody, via state law, by the way, that it's not going to count, that's a hard argument to make, and I don't think one that's tolerable. And so if the... You know, if the court sticks with its injunction, then I think we still have to run the special election just with some goofy maps that they made up on their own back in the
National. There's no turning back to May 19th. I mean, you are running, if you're a candidate 1, 2, 6, or 7, you are running in the August 11th special election, and that will determine the nominee.
That's correct. And then, of course, on the state Senate side of things, you've got, you know, a similar thing where you've made these guys qualify and run in a district that's no longer valid. I mean, look, this is an example for political science students, right, like myself, to go back and look at. This is not how it's supposed to work. This is the antithesis of how the branches of government are supposed to treat each other, because it causes confusion and instability in institutions that we should have confidence in. And that's just unfortunate.
I mean, look, there were sins in Alabama's past. That's undeniable. But in 2026, there's this sort of cottage industry, Mark Elias, Eric Holders. Mm-hmm. This is how they make their living. They wait for every census, and they wait for every reapportionment. Then they just go. They're going to sue on grounds, regardless of whatever map that you guys draw, because this is how they make their living. And finally, with Louisiana, they're taking one of those options, one of those grounds for lawsuits, off the table. I mean, that's sort of the flaw in the system, that we're always in this perpetual litigation. And that these guys, they're incentivized to always raise this litigation.
You're absolutely right. And it's something that we've struggled with in Alabama. How do we do what we know is right versus how do we figure out a way to placate those folks, right, that make their living doing this? And at the end of the day, the Supreme Court has straightened all of this out, thankfully, and said, quit looking at race. Quit it. And so I don't know how the 11th Circuit thinks that when the Supreme Court says stop looking at race, that they can base everything they're looking on race. That's just wrong.
Yeah. So here we are, the state Senate map, and things just kind of go back to, well, they go to the 2021 map, but it's the same map that currently that Senator Barfoot, Senator Hatcher are serving, generally speaking, right?
Exactly. I mean, it is their district. It's the district they're currently serving. And that was the argument I made when I was passing the bill. And everybody said, isn't this going to cause, you know, confusion? I went, why? Senator Hatcher is currently serving in his district. Senator Barfoot is currently serving in his district. The only confusion is that y'all are changing things midstream and awfully close to an election. It's nuts. You know, and I was proud to carry that piece of legislation, get it across the line. I'm glad the courts have upheld it, and they'll have to rerun and, you know, requalify in their own districts and back on the ballot, you know, in August. But the absurdity of all of this is what happened when the court accepted a map from a teenager, right? And that was that Senator Barfoot qualified to run in Senator Hatcher's district, and Senator Hatcher decided to run in Senator Barfoot's district. What was accomplished? What goal was accomplished there? Nothing. Absolutely nothing, except for confusing voters and causing the state to jump through a bunch of hoops to get right back to parity. And that doesn't make any sense. It's just a waste.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. One question not really related to any of this redistricting stuff. We've had, you know, a little while since the Tuesday or the primary election, Democrat turnout, particularly in Madison County. Are you guys worried a little bit here? I mean, statewide, Republicans should be fine, but there are a lot of localities where Democrats far, far outpaced Republicans. And I look at that and I see, I don't know if this enthusiasm hangs out all the way to November, but I could see that being a problem.
Yeah, I don't think that we have an ideological problem there. I still think Republicans are strong in Alabama. I think we have an enthusiasm problem, and it is going to be incumbent upon, you know, office holders like myself, but party officials too, to understand why is that? Why are our Republicans not turning out? The Democrats are turning out, but what are we doing that is not resonating with Republicans, you know, up and down the ticket? And that's a problem. And we're going to have to figure out what that is. But it is a concerning trend. It is something we absolutely need to focus on. I mean, look, Republicans, again, dominated and will continue to dominate, and will continue to dominate statewide offices. We'll continue to hold our supermajorities in the House and the Senate. But we are foolish if we don't understand you know, what's going on in the electorate right now and the enthusiasm gap that we're seeing in the numbers.
Well, it's all politics, I guess, in Alabama is national. And what's going on nationally is kind of dragging down, I think, Republicans in some places.
I think so, too. And I think we can blame some of it on that. But at the end of the day, I think there's some local issues, too. And we saw it in Senator Jones's race and some others. You know, we've got to pay attention to what's going on there. And I'm really curious to see with this independent candidate, how that's going to play in Senator Jones's district as well. I think there's going to be a race there. And so, you know, I've offered to Senator Jones to help him come up there and campaign for him. He's done good work for the state, and we'll work hard to make sure that those incumbents get back in office.
Senator Williams, appreciate your time. Stay safe, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks so much for having me, buddy.
All right, State Senator Chris Elliott. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Jesus. Cowboys, and they still are, it seems. Sadly in search of one step and back of themselves, and they're slow moving.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. IT Jesus, if you're an American that thinks that if you're sympathetic to Islamists, it would give you some kind of favor from them, you're very naive. Hey, why don't you put McKinnon up on condos Orange Beach? Has plenty of money with all their overrated lodging taxes. Jason, I'm surprised there are homeless people in Orange Beach. Are they camping on the beach? Joe, maybe McKinnon and the sheriff could settle it with a dance hall. Surely a balcony. There's a balcony close by. CB Carl, they didn't put gas in the truck, but they carried him over in a city police vehicle. Please try to get the facts straight, Mayor McKinnon, our mayor. As he's called by as many as a piece of work. I'm so glad we left Bear Point years ago, the town that I swore I would never leave once I got back from the battalion. Rick asked me, what is the square root of 7? Is this not the Texas Instrument Calculator show, Rick? And yes, you have a damn good program. Well, you're very kind. Fire Dog, we haven't had any good Zionists or trying to take over the world using the 5G COVID kill shot. How I miss Ricky Tex, maybe the Illuminati. This time, we haven't heard much on that. Might maybe community interest for the race-based map was poverty, crime, illiteracy, and welfare culture. Somerville Tony, I'll tell you what it is. Y'all don't act like real Republicans. Not so much you, Mr. Elliott, but most of them on Goat Hill do not. And then finally, King of All Unnamed Texters. I'm sorry, but it seems ironic after the fact that they need to pay attention. Come up here. On Monday, we'll have State Representative Jennifer Fiddler and Dale Jackson and a guest to be named later. Come up here shortly, midday Mobile. Sean, what you got?
Hey, Jeff, I do wonder if this, you heard you talk about the story. I had it pulled up as well about the, don't bring your homeless here. And this has been going on along
everywhere. It always does.
I mean, when it used to be, like you mentioned, the Mississippi thing, but even before it got to be big, that story, there's this back and forth and back and forth here. And I mean, some of the stuff would get reported in the news, and then people that I know that have been cops, it's like, yeah, that really, because I remember being on there one day going, they don't do much of this. They used to do this a bunch. I did ask them, I said, I wonder if you ever saw, you know, and I don't know if they were in unmarked cars or whatever. You ever saw the people from, like, you know, Pascagoula bringing somebody over here, and you're passing them, bringing them one
back,
of them.
Yeah.
At the same
wave
time.
Each other on the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, like, hey, we're just now the numbers are even again.
Yeah. But, yeah, but it's always been that way, where they just
gotta wait.
Move
I was
them
told.
Around.
Yeah. Kind of come and go in and go, then they eventually get back, I guess, or go back. I don't know.
Yeah, there'll be some big event, like some big dignitary will come to town, and they'll move them all out, and then they'll just kind of find their way back into the overpass or wherever they're.
Isn't that what they did
out
in San Francisco? Though I think I think G was coming.
Yep,
and they just moved everybody out. And
I tell you what's interesting about some places in California, though. Dad lived out there, and I'd go visit him, but like some of the municipalities or sort of like a homeless magnet. They give out freebies, you know, and it's like a stray animal comes and, you know, you're not going to get rid of it because they're handing out checks or they're handing out, clean needles or something.
Well, what would you expect? I mean,
yeah.
If it's better.
It's the opposite mentality of like what you see in different places.
Okay. So L.A. did a lot of that. You know, L.A. has big problems with that. And now Spencer Pratt's out there running for mayor kind of saying, hey, maybe we don't keep doing this.
This is a skid row, you know?
Yeah.
Like, wow.
I mean, it's like blocks and blocks and blocks of skid row out there.
It is.
I mean, not just like an area, like blocks.
Y'all. It's growing, which is, you know, it's just. We have a drug problem in this country, and I think that's what contributes to the homeless problem. I got to get out of here. It has been a pleasure. I will try to do better on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Plour Show on FM Talk 106.5.